Welcome to the Waco Experience, an American story.
We the people.
With your host, D. Scott Smith.
In order to form a more perfect union.
Interviews with leaders in business, government, and nonprofit organizations.
Promote the general welfare.
Jobs, products and services, and infrastructure for strong communities.
Secure the blessings of liberty.
The Waco Experience is an American story, a story of communities across America. It is your story.
We'll live and work in Africa as long as God has us here. One of our coworkers was hearing how our minds had changed, and he said, well, why don't you do both? And I said, well, what do you mean do both? And he said, well, stay here in Uganda, but why don't you build a university here? We want to build something that'll be here for 100 years and impact a continent.
Today's guest on the Waco Experience and American Story, Dr. Philip Sherrow. He and his wife are having a global impact from here in Waco. We'll learn from Dr. Sherrow how founding a university led his work in leadership development. I'm your host, D. Scott Smith. You can learn more about this program and sponsors and find links to the podcast version of this program online at thewacoexperience.com. I'm grateful to our sponsors, White Bluffs Construction, Custom Building, Home Remodeling. I encourage you, call Seth at 254-227-2002 and schedule White Bluffs Construction to build your patio, deck, or pergola. Visit their website, whitebluffsconstruction.com. My wife and I had questions about healthcare insurance. Monica Shannon of Texas Healthcare for You listened to us, answered our questions, and helped my family to find the right coverage. Call Monica today at 254-339-3421. Visit the website, txhealthcareforyou.com. That's txhealthcare, the number 4 and the letter u.com. Biddy and Bo's Coffee offers hot and cold beverages, catering, and provides employment for people with disabilities. They offer a conference room you can reserve and use at no cost. Visit Biddy and Bo's Coffee today at 110 Franklin in Waco. Chord Buddy is the world's best way to learn guitar. 100% U.S. made, this learning system and Shark Tank winner will have you playing real music on a real guitar right away. Learn to play guitar today at chordbuddy.com. The Cactus Rose Ranch. Young, old, or in between, learning how to work with a horse is confidence building. Cactus Rose Ranch offers individual lessons or monthly memberships. Contact them for riding lessons or ranch parties and their nonprofit program, Healing Heroes with Horses. Online at thecactusroseranch.com. Well, D. Scott here, and we are back at the Baylor Club, sitting out on the patio. Today's guest is Dr. Philip Sherrow. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about his background. Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Scott.
So let's get right into it. Let's talk about what you're doing right now. What are you doing here? You're living in Waco.
Yes. Yeah, we moved to Waco a year and a half ago from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, doing leadership development with privately held companies.
Leadership development. I mean, I hear that all the time. There are tons of books, literally tons of books, written every year about leadership. What's this all about?
I have a three-word definition of leadership that goes along with the term ROI. So you think about ROI in a business. What's ROI in leadership? It's replication, ownership, and influence. So, you know, John Maxwell is famous for saying leadership is influence. If you have leadership, if you have influence in a situation or with people, then you are exerting leadership. We feel like we want to expand on that idea and say it also includes taking ownership for everything that happens on your watch or everything that happens, whether it's your fault or directly something you did or didn't do. But as a leader, you own the outcome, not just the input. And replication is, are you able to lift up someone else, develop someone else, mentor a successor, equip someone else to do what you do, and hopefully do that many times. If you're doing all of those things, then you're really a positive leader. You're creating positive influence in the world.
There's some biblical verses about leadership.
Yes.
So let's talk about that aspect as well, because faith
plays a big part in your life, and we're going to learn more about that as we continue.
Yeah, it does, and the name of our company is Masterminds Leadership, and that's not that I'm a mastermind or that we create a bunch of masterminds, but it's really that leadership comes from having the mindset of the master leader. I think about 1 Corinthians 2:16 that says, we've been given the mind of Christ so that we actually think differently about people. We think differently about the organizations and our relationships and how we get things done. And with that different mindset, not only does our leadership look differently, but everything we touch is different because it's coming from a different perspective. We apply that in a business setting, whether the leaders know Christ or whether they personally have faith or not. That's not a prerequisite, but it certainly drives our perspective on leadership and developing other leaders. And the beginning of that is, I'm not here for me. I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve other people. I'm here to serve the organization, serve the clients or the community. That servant first mentality is a big piece of the mindset that we approach it with.
Over 2,000 years ago, Jesus set the model for servant leadership.
Yes.
But it's become popular today, mm-hmm. probably in the last 10, 20 years. But following World War II, mm-hmm. the leadership style in many organizations and large corporations was command and control.
Yes.
Because the leaders came out of World War II. They came from a command and control military type structure. So let's talk about that mm-hmm. change from command and control to servant leadership.
Yes. So the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear command and control is a famous Navy admiral, and I can't call his name right now, but he said, I've learned in my career that the more I give up control, the more I gain in command. So coming out of that military background and that leadership model, he said, actually what works better, giving up control to people around me, empowering them to do what they do, letting them make decisions, letting them actually own a piece of the budget or how it's done, and take their own responsibility. And in doing so, I actually gain command. I'm granted authority beyond my title or position. So I would say, even in a military setting, successful leaders will tell you command and control, it isn't the full definition that we think of. It's authoritarian, it's top down, it's I tell you to jump and you ask how high. That's maybe a caricature of a type of leadership that doesn't actually work even in the military. There are situations where very direct, fully in charge leadership is required. A crisis, a quick response where everybody knows their job and how to do it. And I'm the leader's just snapping out, here's what's next, do this, go there. Those success in those crisis situations is really built on what was all the teamwork, the camaraderie, the training, the trust that was developed before we got to the battlefield scenario. And all of that still included what I would call aspects of the servant leadership. I'm going to enable you to do your job. I'm going to serve and equip you. You can count on me. I'm here. We work as a team. All of that was built sort of offline or off the field. And then when they got in the crisis situation, their effectiveness and command and control structure is because of the relationship development, the trust, the loyalty, the mutual commitment. And all of those, I would say, would be aspects of servant leadership. I'm not here for myself. It's not about ego or you saluting me. We've come to trust each other because our attitude is, I'm here for the person next to me.
And that's an important thing, is building trust. And I've often talked about different aspects of leadership. And one of them is building trust. And this isn't necessarily the trust between the leader and the follower, right? Because if you don't have that trust, you're a tyrant,
right?
Not a leader, right? Yeah. But it's building that trust between the followers, right? That says, you're going to do your job, I'll do my job, and I trust that you're going to do that. And we're sitting here looking over the football field, and I think about that because if the tackle doesn't block, then it doesn't matter what the running back does, because as it turns out, a football is not very heavy to carry. Yeah. Right. It's not a lot of work, but it's hard when people are hitting you. So if that running back needs to trust that that tackle's going to do the job, talk about how that applies in the workforce. And first of all, tell us how we get a hold of you. What's the website? Where do we learn about this?
Yeah. So people can go to mastermindsleadership.com. Mastermindsleadership.com. We're also on LinkedIn. We've got a ton of videos that we post weekly on LinkedIn, and they're also on our YouTube channel. So if you search Masterminds Leadership on YouTube, you'll find us there as well.
Okay, perfect. So let's continue on with trust.
Yeah. So what's the leader's role in creating an environment where that trust can really grow and develop? I think about two different models of leadership. One I call hub and spoke. That's where everyone reports to the leader. They're the spokes and the leader is the hub, and they're all reporting to him or her, accountable to the leader, getting their direction from the leader. And then the spokes go out and everybody does their thing. In that model, there's not a lot of opportunity for trust to develop between the spokes, because the authority relationship, the communication relationship, the accountability is all running back and forth between the leader and that individual follower. If leaders can sort of set that model aside and begin to build a team, one of the core definitions of a team is where the members of the team are accountable to each other, not just to the leader. So the leader can foster the development of trust by creating an environment where people communicate with each other, not just with the leader, where they go back and forth on dividing up their work or discussing a problem or solving a problem or asking each other for help and delivering things on time as expected to each other, not just making all the deliveries to the leader. So the way the leader sets up the team, I'm a big fan of one-on-ones. I think leaders should develop that one-on-one relationship. But if the one-on-one is the only communication channel, if there's not team meetings, if there's not team communication, just as part of the fabric of how the organization's set up, then I don't have the opportunity to build trust with my coworker. They're not relying on me. I'm not relying on them. We both just report to the boss.
Just remind everybody, we are here with Dr. Philip Shero. Yeah, talking about leadership development. Well, we're sitting here in the Baylor Club overlooking the football field. My father had quoted Vince Lombardi and said that the difference between a committee and a team is that the members of a team love each other.
Yeah.
I've looked to find that quote from Vince Lombardi. I have never seen it, so I attribute it to my father. The difference between a committee and a team is that the members of a team love each other. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, because you were just talking about how these different forms of communication, where you're actually sitting side by side in the same meeting, in the same activities, in the same events with your coworkers, how that builds trust.
Just right away, people that hear that definition of a team, members love each other, may want to agree with it, but get hung up on this concept of love. Like, does that apply in a business setting? Or am I supposed to actually love my coworkers? You know, some of them I may not even like. You know, how do I love those people? So I want to help people understand love apart from just the emotional feeling that when we love our spouse or we love our kids, we feel that emotional bond. That bond is actually secondary to a decision that we are committed to the good of the other. So if I'm committed to the good of my coworker, then emotional connection is likely to follow, you know, that I will have positive feelings toward that person, that I will want good for them. But the first step is that I'm committed to their good. And here's the extra mile step. I'm committed to their good, even at my expense. That's what really pushes it over the top. And really, I feel like underneath our concept of trust is this question of, are you going to do what's in my best interest, even if it costs you something? Or if when the chips are down and the rubber hits the road, you're going to protect yourself and do what's good for you and leave me to fend for myself. If that's the case, I can only trust you so far. I can trust you to an extent, but I can't fully put my trust in you because I think, well, you know, when push comes to shove, you're going to take care of you and I'm going to be left to myself, which means I better be taking care of me. So that limits how much trust we have. It also limits how far I'm going to go for you, because I think you're only going to go so far for me. So I'm going to only go so far for you. If you want to break through that, the leader models the way by demonstrating they can be trusted to do what's in the best interest of their followers, even if it costs them something. To make it super practical, a project goes sideways, the higher up boss is upset, or the client is upset. Now, what do I as a leader do in that moment? Do I throw somebody under the bus? Well, they didn't get it to me in time, or they didn't do what I expected, and I'm sorry, boss, or I'm sorry, customer, that's why we let you down. Or do I go back to that O in ROI for leadership, and I take ownership of that, and I say, I am sorry that I let you down, customer or big boss up there. I'm going to do everything I can to make it right. At my cost, I don't expose my team to blame or critique from the outside. Now, internally, we may sit down and talk about what could go better or what do I need from you as my team members. But in that moment, I, at my cost and expense, did not throw you under the bus. And if I demonstrate that kind of leadership, people start to go, oh, maybe I'm safe here. Maybe I can trust the leader, and then maybe I can trust my coworkers because they're modeling. I'm not gonna throw you under the bus. I'm gonna protect you and your interests. And that's just one example, but it's a real practical one. How do we handle those setback or failure situations? And the way we handle it has everything to do with whether people believe they can trust us, they believe we have their best interest at heart, and how much of that love is actually going to develop.
So today's guest on the Waco Experience in American Story, Dr. Philip Sherrow, talking leadership, but let's get into your background. You have a doctorate. Let's talk about your education and your path.
Yeah.
Because we just mentioned that you're here in Waco a year and a half, came from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Tell us about your education and your journey. Where have you all been? You and your wife and family.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So when Laura and I met in college, and we both loved learning, and we also loved developing other people, you know, just pouring into folks and helping them see their potential. And we thought the way we were going to do that is that we would both continue all the way through school, earn the PhD, go teach in a university setting, and use our vocation as a platform or a way to reach out to young people at that critical point in their life where they're trying to figure out, who am I? Why am I here? What am I good at? What am I passionate about? What's my identity and path in life? They're trying to answer all those questions in those college years. And we thought, we could teach in a university, and then we could help the young people around us to figure that out. And that was very inspiring to us. And we thought, okay, this is our plan. But we thought, well, if we're college professors, we'll have our summers free. So in the summer, we can travel, and our faith is very important to us. We thought, we'll go on mission trips. You know, we'll go serve in other places around the world. So we got married, and we planned our first trip. Actually, our first anniversary was in Nairobi, Kenya. You know, what an adventure. Like, this is amazing. Here we are in Africa, and we're just kind of setting out our life together with this sort of adventure, but also our life plan. Well, during that summer, we stayed with a team in Uganda. And at the end of the summer, they said, would you come back and join us? Would you come work with us here in Africa full time? Wow. You know, what an invitation. And I remember kind of an Indiana Jones feeling of, oh, let's go do this adventure. It'll be great. It'll be amazing. We can put our dream on hold, go do this Africa adventure, and then we'll come back and sort of continue the education and get back to our, quote, life plan. Well, while we were there, we were so convicted by the need, by the opportunity, and really a sense of calling on our life that, hey, maybe we should stay here longer. So we let go of our dream. We said, we'll live and work in Africa as long as God has us here. Well, a few months after making that momentous decision, one of our coworkers was hearing us tell about the story that of how our minds had changed. And he said, well, why don't you do both? And I said, well, what do you mean do both? And he said, well, stay here in Uganda, but why don't you build a university here? What a mind-blowing concept. But it was one of those moments that I felt like our path was just illumined, like the clouds parted, everything was clear. And I thought, I don't know how in the world we're going to do this, but this is what I want to do. Wow, what a challenge, what a vision. I would love to do that. And over the next 10 years, we dedicated ourselves to building and establishing Livingstone International University. People can actually find that online. If you want to go Livingstone International University, put that in your browser. You'll find the U.S. organization that supports and funds it, and you'll find the actual university website. That university is still going today. Took 10 years to birth, and my educational journey really was driven by that project. So my first two degrees are in theology and ministry, and I thought that's a great spiritual foundation, but I need the organizational side, the business thinking, the leadership. How do I structure this so that we build something that lasts? So I went back to school while I was in Africa through Regent University and earned a doctorate in organizational leadership, which helped me build the school, and it also helped for accreditation. So it really was a means to an end. Instead of, I need a PhD to go teach somewhere else. I need to learn how to build an organization and lead it, because we want to build something that'll be here for 100 years and impact a continent. So that's really how that journey sort of shifted and turned.
This is just one of those amazing entrepreneurial journeys. So let's talk about some of the government aspects of setting. What's it like to set up a university in a country that you did not grow up in?
Well, I had to learn everything from scratch. I was just so aware I didn't know what I didn't know. I would say there's two men that just poured into me so generously. One of them is Professor Stephen Knoll, who was at the time the president of Uganda Christian University, which is the Anglican or the Church of Uganda University in Uganda. He just, wow. I went to him sort of in desperation and said, hey, you did this. You built a university in Africa. I need to learn from you. So he was my Yoda. I just went to him and gained so much from him. And the other gentleman was Michel Lejeune from Europe, had lived in Uganda at the time for 45, 50 years, had such an impact that the government made him the head of the National Council for Higher Education. So under the Ministry of Education, he was the head for all university and tertiary institution education in the country as a European, as a white male, but had so served the people and the culture of Uganda and just really given his life for that. And he, for many years, was the president of Uganda Martyrs University, which was the Catholic university. So those two gentlemen had done what I was hoping to do and became mentors for me and helped me navigate the government, the higher education accreditation process, introduced me to people, shared so much knowledge and experience that never could have done it without them.
You and your wife celebrated your first anniversary in Kenya.
Yes.
You have another anniversary coming up. In your business, you work with big companies. I know you'll be doing some travel to work with a famous sports apparel company in the Northwest.
That's right.
So let's talk about some of the things that are coming up, including your anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Leave us with some inspirational thoughts about leadership, about faith, and about how we can integrate all of this into our personal and business and family lives.
Yeah, so one thing I hope listeners would take away is an invitation to adventure in their own life where they are right now. That at any moment, we are standing on the threshold of an unbelievable adventure and journey. And sometimes I think if you're in business, especially if you're a business leader, even more especially if you're a founder or an entrepreneur, the demands and the pressures of that can close down maybe some dreams that you started with. There's so much to be done. And the challenge of entrepreneurship or of building something is huge. I mean, you're in a sense, you're hacking it out of the jungle. You're carving the trail, blazing the trail, and you're trying to make opportunities for others. And so you've got to get enough revenue coming in. And there's that constant pressure of, I need to make payroll. I need to take care of these employees who have families, and that weight of responsibility feels heavy. And all of that can kind of turn our eyes away from what once inspired us. And if I look back over my journey, I see the dreams and ideas that I had, they were exciting to me, but what God had for me was so much bigger than what I imagined. I mean, it truly was that Ephesians, you know, God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or imagine. So I would encourage people to turn back to that imagination and ask what else is possible that I'm not even seeing. I thought Laura and I would be, you know, teaching in a university somewhere else, sort of a cog in a bigger machine, doing our little part. And that's true that we all do our part within a larger design. I had no idea that we would get to start a new university, found that in Africa, see students and faculty coming from 5 or 6 different countries, see students being mentored and developed and grown. What is possible when we say yes to an invitation to adventure? And really, that's why we're in Waco today. We've been in DFW for the last decade, and we still have so much good work to do there and so many good relationships. We're still operating there, but we felt like, is there a door opening to a new adventure? And we felt like that was going to start in Waco. Here we are in Waco, you know, on the shores of the Brazos, in the shadow of Baylor. So many possibilities, so many things that could happen if we just say yes. And that always involves an element of risk. And the best invitations will always seem bigger than us, and we won't know how to do them at first. We're going to need people along the way. We're going to need mentors. We're going to need new skills and new resources. But you don't have to have all that to say yes. You can say yes, and then there's that risk or that faith element. In fact, one of our core values at Masterminds is embracing risk, is leaning in and saying, okay, I don't know how, I don't know all the steps, but I'm going to say yes.
The Waco Experience, An American Story, is a production of D. Scott Smith Company, all rights reserved. Thank you for listening.